But you broke your own rule, insisted Dirk. Last night you changed something in the past. Well, yes, said Reg, a little uncomfortably. But that was different, very different. If you had seen the look on the poor child's face, so miserable. She thought the world should be a marvellous place, and all those appalling old dons were pouring their withering scorn on her just because it wasn't marvellous for them any more. I mean, he added, appealing to Richard, remember Corley, what a bloodless old goat. Someone should get some humanity into him, even if they have to knock it in with a brick. No, that was perfectly justifiable. Otherwise I make a very strict rule. Richard looked at him with dawning recognition of something. Reg, he said politely, may I give you a little advice? Of course you may, my dear fellow. I should adore you two, said Reg. If our mutual friend here offers to take you for a stroll along the banks of the River Cam, don't go. What on earth do you mean? He means, said Dirk earnestly, that he thinks there may be something a little disproportionate between what you actually did and your stated reasons for doing it. Oh, well, odd way of saying it. Well, he's a very odd fellow, but you see, there sometimes may be other reasons for things you do which you are not necessarily aware of, as in the case of post-hypnotic suggestion, or possession. Reg turned very pale. Possession, he said. Professor Reg, I believe there was some reason you wanted to see me, said Richard. What exactly was it? Cambridge, this is Cambridge, came the lilting squawk of the station public address system. Crowds of noisy revellers spewed out onto the platform, barking and honking at each other. Where's Rodney? Said one, who had clambered with difficulty from the carriage in which the bar was situated. He and his companion looked up and down the platform totteringly. The large figure of Michael Wenton Weeks loomed silently past them and out to the exit. They jostled their way down the side of the train, looking in through the dirty carriage windows. They suddenly saw their missing companion still sitting trance-like in his seat in the now almost empty compartment. They banged on the window and hooted at him. For a moment or two he didn't react, and when he did, he woke suddenly in a puzzled way as if seeming not to know where he was. "He's pie-eyed!" his companions bawled happily, bundling themselves onto the train again and bundling Rodney back off. He stood woozily on the platform and shook his head. Then, glancing up, he saw through the railings the large bulk of Michael Wenton Weeks, heaving himself and a large heavy bag into a taxicab, and stood for a moment transfixed. "Extraordinary thing," he said. "That man telling me a long story about some kind of shipwreck." "Ha ha!" gurgled one of his two companions. "Get any money off you?" "What?" said Rodney, puzzled. "No, no, I don't think so. Except it wasn't a shipwreck, more an accident, an explosion. He seems to think he caused it in some way, or rather there was an accident and he caused an explosion trying to put it right and killed everybody. Then he said there was an awful lot of rotting mud for years and years and then slimy things with legs, so it's all a bit peculiar. Trust Rodney to pick a madman. I think he must have been mad. He suddenly went off on a tangent about some bird. He said the bit about the bird was all nonsense. He wished he could get rid of the bit about the bird. And then he said it would be put right. It would all be put right. For some reason, I didn't like it when he said that. Should have come along to the bar with us. Terribly funny. I also didn't like the way he said goodbye. I didn't like that at all.